Welcome to Bottom Lines, Top Dollars,
a podcast about all the money things you suspect might be ruining your life.
I'm Laura Boo. I'm recording from Charlottetown on the island of Abegwicht, otherwise known as Prince Edward Island, Canada.
And I'm Hadassah Damian on Cheyenne, Ute, and Arapaho land in the sunny Front Range of the Rocky Mountains in Denver, Colorado.
And this is the first time you've heard our voices in about 5 months.
Which, you know, with some ways of putting together your podcasts and seasons is perfectly normal and healthy, but we did realize we maybe left some of you hanging and didn't mention that we were going to take a break. But why is that, Laura?
That's because some bad things happened for me and some good things happened for Hadassah. But the outcome was that both of our lives kind of got a bit changey. And
we didn't really know we were going to take a break. We didn't plan for taking a break. And as planners, it was unsettling.
It was. And you know what? When we finally got back into contact and started to sort of crawl back into it in the last couple weeks, we had this realization that we needed to just put something out there and let people know what had happened. And so we had this idea to make an episode, you know, all about coming back from some bullshit.
Yeah. Like, here's the cold hard facts. We're just like you, and just like you, everybody has just like things that happen in their lives that will take you off the course that you thought that you were on. And that is the truth of living, life, period.
Surreal.
Yeah, it's just so real. And so what's interesting is, like, you know, Laura had some rough things go on. I had some really positive things go on, and we had different reasons and roads, but we still had this similar outcome where we ended up pausing on a project that we both loved. And so we just wanted to reflect on, what do you do when, no matter how you have gotten there, you have not taken the action that you meant to take in life? Like, so how do you get back on the horse? How do you restart the train? How do you break open the cereal box again? Like, just how do you come back when you meant to be doing something that you weren't doing?
Exactly. And so, you know, where have we been for the last 5 months? What was this? For me, some bad things happened in my personal life that, you know, basically, as my best friend Hugs would say, activated some capital T trauma for me. And my coping mechanism was basically to set my life on fire, i.e. I just kind of shut down. And I don't know if other people can relate to this, but I kind of had this moment where I was freaking out, and everyone that was trying to communicate with me became a point that just made me panic. So I stopped answering my phone. I stopped answering text messages. I stopped looking at any social media whatsoever, which in the end turned out to be positive, because now I am pretty much off social media and found that
sounds relaxing.
I'm connecting with real life a little bit more. But it was like not a planned break from social media, which meant that a lot of people messaged me and I just wasn't there suddenly. Basically, I started ghosting everyone in my life except for my job, my partner who I live with, and basically my mom and my siblings and nibblings. Like, I just basically stopped being anything that was social or optional in my life, I just stopped without explanation. And that included, you know, we recorded our last listener mail episode, and the last thing Hadassah heard from me was, I'll edit this and I'll have it up in a couple weeks. And that was in at the end of August.
That was August. And meanwhile, at the end of August, I got into contract on a house and then just went on a whole purchasing a house, acquiring keys, putting things in it that it needed, putting things in it that I wanted. And also at the same time, reassessing what it was to understand how I wanted to put my life together, like from how I wanted to experience my everyday and how I wanted to approach work. And so I found myself really disinterested in social media and interested instead in physical practicalities and creativities of life, which again, I feel great about, but I also, it's interesting. It also still felt like, well, certain things just can only get so much follow-up, right? And like, you know, I reached out to you a couple times, but I wasn't like, hey, Laura.
No, that was the thing. I actually was feeling really bad because I knew that you had sent texts, and it was this thing where every time a text would come in, I'd be like, fuck, I need to answer this. Mm. But just even looking at the text, I just started to freak out. And I was like, I don't know. Over the course of months, I kind of started to figure out why I was freaking out, and I started to pull myself out of it. But it took a while. And, you know, basically it's only been in the last 4 to 8 weeks that I've finally been talking to people again. And so one of the great things was that when Hadassah and I finally reconnected, Hadassah was like, no problem. Let's just keep going. And it's been such an interesting thing, because part of my not talking to people at a certain point was because I had maybe not answered a few text messages, and then it was a part of it. It became like, well, now I have to explain why I haven't answered text messages and the fear that that would be a problem. But, you know, when I talked with Hadassah, it was just like, no problem. You know, this project has been so great for us and so much fun, and we love it. But in the end, this is also, you know, we both have jobs, we both have things going on in our lives, and we ended up taking a little bit of a break, and now we're back. Doesn't mean that we can't keep going, can't make new episodes.
totally. And like, I mean, it's so interesting. Like, I love to be data driven, and I wasn't able to find data on this. So I'm just going to generalize and say that the last half of 2021 was just rough for most people, right? Yeah. Obviously unevenly. Obviously we could do an intersectional analysis on this, but
you're like, you know, don't need a scientist to tell you that.
Oh, it got too real by the end. Yeah. It's been a lot. And so, you know, on the, like, it's like, I, as a friend, also like want to offer empathy to Laura, but to any of my other friends, and then also hopefully by extension to myself, on what it is to need to change how you're interacting or change what you're doing, or just, you know, take a break. And I mean, there's just there's like so many like thought pieces or whatever, and like initial research coming out about the fact that we basically all need a break. Nobody's gotten an adequate break in the last 2 years or so. Like, different industries are going to be impacted in different ways, but like if you feel like you're needing a break, if you're listening to this thinking either about the break that you kind of force took in life, that like just came upon you, or the, and by the way, getting COVID doesn't count as taking a break. That's called recovery. Okay. So if your only break was when you had COVID, you didn't get a break. I'm just going to say that, you know, but it, our mental health is struggling, as a corpus, right? Like, not just as a country, but like as a globe, within this pandemic, but also I think within a lot of realities that are surfacing about dysfunctional natures of work and the dysfunctional natures of the climate. And it's all starting to come together, for people to, I think, really realistically start to have some not great reactions.
Like a reckoning. I feel like there's reckonings.
There's reckonings happening. And again, back to the fact that me and Laura are just like you. Like all of us are going to at times in our life have these moments where we're just like, I can't actually go on. Like I cannot do the thing.
Yeah, it is understandable.
It's normal,
it is
actually.
Understandable and normal that sometimes your people cope by pulling away from all or parts of your life.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, like this last couple of months honestly felt like much more of a living into my life. But at other times in my life, I have ignored it. When I'm thinking about financial things or like, quote, adulting stuff, like I ignored my student loan bills when they first started coming in for 2 years, even when they called my mom every day. It was bad, you know, but I just like didn't know how to deal with it and therefore didn't deal with it. Oh, you know, like I didn't like invest my first retirement account, right? I didn't know you were supposed to open the account, put money in, and then invest the account. But because I wasn't checking back in on it, like I had just tapped out, I didn't know, you know, like there's so many ways in life that it's like, you think you're supposed to do something, you don't, or you feel like you're supposed to do something, you don't do the thing, and then you feel worse because you don't do the thing.
And then not doing the thing becomes the avoiding of the thing.
Right. And so you have a whole sort of, avoidance cycle that then if you were to go just kind of deal with the thing would actually get resolved relatively simply, but that's not how it feels in your mind. So we're going to go kind of into ways that you might resolve coming back from some bullshit through the rest of this call. And just kind of number, like honor that it happens, like hold space for the fact that like, we live in like a time that asks too much of all of us and therefore like breaks, whether intentional and shifts that are intentional or unintentional, are just like going to happen to all of us. And moments when we just like cannot are going to happen to all of us. And so rather than act like nobody ever does this and it doesn't happen, no, we're going to talk about it head on today and say like, all right, like that pause, that moment when you couldn't, then what do you do next? And what is it like to come back? You know, and I wonder, do you want to give any more context, Laura?
I mean, I think that it is hard to keep up with the million things that we're expected to do all at once in modern society. Like when I sometimes...
Like all this and cook? I just can't.
Yeah. Honestly, like it's been an interesting thing these last couple of years also as people have taken, you know, breaks that were kind of forced on them where... And now they're, you know, some of them are coming back into work. But in the last 2 years, you know, I was working the entire time and my partner was off work for a big section. And we realized during that time that in some ways that made us able to get a few things done that for years we'd been like, how are we supposed to have jobs, clean our house, eat home-cooked meals, exercise, have friends, talk with our family, like so many things. And on top of that, we don't have kids. Like those people who are like, and I feel this ticking clock or this like responsibility to breed. I'm like, I don't know. And on top of all of it, you're supposed to look great the whole time and be taking pictures of yourself and putting them on the internet. It's just like a lot of things.
Right. And you're supposed to be like not only doing life perfectly, but performing doing life perfectly.
Yes. Which and you're is supposed to be silly. Like constantly on a trajectory of improvement, you know?
And improvement is always doing more, extracting more value from your own time so that you can extract more resources out of the earth. Like, of course, this isn't sustainable. It doesn't work.
No, absolutely not. And it's like sometimes with the pressures that we have or we're racing to do things, even when you're trying to do everything, things start to fall through the cracks. Mm-hmm. You forget things. And the nature of my, you know, personal disaster that happened was basically something like that, where something that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't in a way, I'm trying to get away from this because I've been blaming myself for a few months. Mm. Like something fell to the floor, hit it, and broke into a million pieces, and I couldn't put it back together again in my life. And when it happened, it just shattered a bunch of other things. And I suddenly felt freaked out and terrible about myself and completely devastated. And looking back, you know, this whole time where I think that I was hiding for so many reasons, a lot of them were fear and shame and exhaustion. And looking back at it, I'm like, at the time, I felt so isolated, thinking that what was happening to me was such an immense personal failure that no one else would understand, and therefore I didn't want to talk to anybody. But in reality, you know, everybody burns out. Everybody falls on their face. Everybody at some point is going to need a break, or, you know, big things happen in your life and maybe they're positive, but they're just a big thing. And it takes up 100% of your time for a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so looking at our topic today, you know, how the fuck do you come back from some bullshit? The kind of notion is sometimes, you know, something happens in your life, whatever it is, and you end up either ghosting on a piece of your life or your whole life. And ghosting, as in like ignoring something, that kind of ignoring or ghosting either people or an issue or something in your life, it's the snake that eats its own tail. And the ghosting, potentially as your coping mechanism, it's like a terrible coping mechanism, I have to say. At least that's my experience. Ghosting actually ghosting because, you know, of X, either a good thing or a bad thing, but choosing to ignore something, then that actually creates more problems. It doesn't solve problems, right? Like now, because you've ignored the thing or ghosted, you know, for me, now I have to explain to all of my friends why the fuck I've been absent for 4.5 months. But if the ignoring is related to, you know, not opening your mail that comes from the government for 5 years, or, you know, not answering phone calls from any number you don't recognize because you're afraid that it's a collections agency, or, you know, constantly shelving your dreams of doing things like buying a home or getting out of debt or finally investing because all of that seems too overwhelming, and you tell yourself in your mind, you're like, later, I'll do it later, later, later. And that becomes years.
Mm-hmm. We've all been there.
Then this ghosting, this ignoring, this pretending becomes the problem.
Right. Right. Yeah. You start with one thing that you don't want to do, but then the not doing it becomes the bigger kind of issue. Right. Correct. And so we wanted to just give you a couple steps. So again, everyone has been there. If you haven't been there, I'm going to go ahead and say, maybe you haven't been there yet in life. Or maybe you're just extremely efficient and God bless you. But for the rest of us, right, here's how we can face problems of our own creation. So, and I think Laura, even just like coming here today and like talking about your experience, you know, when we were talking earlier, what I heard from you is that first you had to kind of realize that you were ghosting on your life. You had to realize that you were avoiding things and getting back at people. But then you also had to understand why you were doing it and give yourself some like self-understanding and like self-forgiveness. So it was like, in a way, it was like step one, realize that you're avoiding things, right? Like actually recognize that you're doing an avoidant behavior
or in a systematic way, because it's easy when you open your mail to be like, you know, you're shuffling through the mail, although I get a lot less mail. I feel like there used to be letters all the time, but now you look at the mail and you're like, ah, I don't want to see that. And you put it in a pile by the door. And that is like a 2-second thing. And you walk away and you don't think about it until you get another letter. It's this, you have to come to the realization that you have done that for every letter for X number of years. For me, it was realizing that it wasn't just, oh, I don't want to answer this text right now. I had to realize that I hadn't answered anybody's texts in a couple months.
Right. Totally. So just like acknowledging that you're not kind of facing something that is coming at you over and over. And it's interesting because I like to think of this as like, am I making short-term decisions or long-term decisions? Like a short-term decision is like quick decision, put the mail down, put the call to voicemail, you know, don't follow up on the thing, on like the person who's reaching out. But ultimately that's not a long-term decision, kind of to your point, Laura, because you're like, well, at some point, not only now do you have to like answer the back 30 pieces of mail, or in my case, like get your student loans out of default because you ignored them for so long, you know, and, you know, take doable, but not as fun action steps as if you had just done the thing in the first place. Right. So it's like first step, just, is this happening? Right. And then I think really importantly, and you touched on this, Laura, like forgive yourself for what has happened. Like give yourself some empathy, right? Think about like, again, as your friend, when you came to me and you were like, oh man, like I'm having this moment that I think is like, you know, connected to other stuff in my life. And this is how I'm feeling. And it's really rough. Like I care about you. So of course, like it was very easy for me to be like, yo friend, no worries. Like let's come back together when you're ready, when it feels good. Like, you know, and I would encourage each of us to say, how would you care for a friend who's trying to come back for some bullshit? And how do you give that same love to yourself and that same forgiveness to yourself and that same non-judgment to yourself?
Absolutely. So much of my
important. Yeah.
Like I had this realization that I was doing this non-productive negative thing. And then it took me a little while to be like, why am I doing this? And it actually took me a couple weeks to be like, holy shit, I started doing this around this date. And then being like, oh, this is all connected to this event that happened. Like we all think of like a crisis as being something that's very obvious and like, you know, extreme. But it was something where I actually had to paint it back and be like, wow, I have legit been totally hermiting and freaking out because of this thing that at that time I was like, I didn't want to deal with the feelings then and all it did was fester. And so it took me a little bit to be like, okay, I am doing this thing. I'm doing it systematically. Why am I doing this? Oh, it's because of this. And then to say, then there was a whole period where I was like, I felt really guilty. And it's not like suddenly I was like, oh my God, I'm going to text everybody that I know who I haven't spoken to in 3 months. You know, like this whole, the last, you know, 2 months of the 5 months of a break wasn't the freaking out part. It was the part of being like, how do I get myself out of this? How do I get back in touch with my friends? How do I get back into making this podcast that I love? Like, I think that I was afraid to reach out to people because I was afraid that they would be like, fuck you. I never want to speak to you again. Our podcast is over. Oh. We're done, you know? And it's not necessary. And the thing about it is that's not necessarily rational.
Right. No,
and that's like, where the self-forgiveness comes in. Because like totally. You said, if thinking about the times in which this has happened to friends and they have come to me, it has never, you know, I've definitely had friends where I haven't spoken to them in several months and they come back and they're like, I just had a really rough couple of months. And I've been like, I'm so sorry to hear that. And I think that they were afraid that our friendship was over. But for me, it wasn't over.
Totally. And I think it's interesting to me because it, from a behavior standpoint, what do I think is happening? And I think it's useful to understand. It's like, I think it's very common to like want to over-dramatize or have a story that we're telling ourselves that if we aren't doing something and we feel bad about it and we're feeling guilty, that it's going to be hard to fix, right? Yeah. It's going to be very difficult to dig ourselves out of this hole. And the thing that I want to kind of help us reframe is to say, well, what if actually it's easy to fix? What if we are telling ourselves not, oh, this is hard and it's not fixable, but what if it's actually totally fixable? What if it's not
this
even broken?
Is right? This is right? The center of it is that yes. In my yeah. mind, I was like, oh my God, my, you know, and then I started to blame myself and be like, my super dysfunctional way of being upset and ghosting has now created this problem and I've ruined my entire life. But actually, that thing was not as bad as I thought. And the solution was actually totally doable. And there was, I think I was very, very connected. I had like kind of centralized this, you know, internal narrative as if it was this epic thing and that it was constantly in the present, you know, and what I had to do is just let it be over. And it's so interesting when we were chatting beforehand, you said something where you're like, you know, all you can do is be in today. What are you going to do today? What action can you take now? And, and I said this thing where I was like, you know, the bad thing that happened, it's like a sunk cost, which is totally now my accountant way of dealing with the world is that I take these financial notions and apply it to life. But a sunk cost is when, you know, if you spend money on something, the money is already spent. And then afterwards you realize that actually you purchased or spent the, you know, something that is not useful to you. You know, we call this a sunk cost. Like, for example, when people buy a bus pass, they suddenly feel the need to ride the bus a lot because they think that if they ride the bus more, then they've gotten like more bang for their buck, that somehow it makes the bus pass cheaper.
And it doesn't. Or conversely, you feel bad if you buy a bus pass and then you don't ride the bus and you're like, oh, mea culpa. I like didn't get the value out of it. And, you know,
I wasted my money.
Look, the bus pass is bought, right?
It's like, done.
And this is the example I said to you. This is like such a dad platitude, but I've like, you know, say it to clients all the time where I'm like, look, what's the best time to plant a tree 20 years ago? Well, what's the second best time to plant a tree? That's today, y'all, you know, and the thing, it brings up the point, like whatever happened in the past, you bought the bus pass, you didn't answer the mail, you didn't plant the tree, you like let a bunch of stuff slip through the cracks. That's done. Like those days are over. That time has passed. You can't do anything about it. All you can do is what you can do today. And you know, potentially make some plans for what you're going to do tomorrow in the future. But it's the sunk cost. What has happened is over. You know, the only opportunity that you have is to decide how you're going to approach what's going on today. Right. And so, and this is,
and sunk cost is about the feelings about the past. Like we're letting our feelings.
Yeah. It's the judgment. Yeah. Sunk cost fallacy is exactly that. It's like, I feel so bad about whatever happened in the past. I get paralyzed and cannot take the action that I'm trying to take today, which is why doing an action, opening the mail, returning a phone call, listening to the voicemail, listening to the text, one little tiny action starts to break the narrative that everything is unfixable.
Absolutely. And be able to, you know, in a way it's like saying, you know, that thing is over. You have to let it go.
Yep.
Even if it was a bad decision, a bad thing that you've done, don't let it fuck up the future. It's like saying, you know, you're standing at the bus stop and you have a 40-minute commute into the city and you've bought your bus pass. You know, your bus pass was like $100 and you're sitting there waiting. And then a friend rolls up in a car and says, hey, I'm heading into town. Do you want to ride? And if you get in the car, it'll take you 10 minutes to be downtown. But you're like, no, I bought a $100 bus pass. I need to wait for this bus and get on this bus and ride it for 40 minutes instead of taking this 10-minute car ride, because you are attached to the decision that you made in the past or the bad thing that you did in the past. And that's the thing that was one of the things that was blocking me from making positive, good decisions in the future. You know, like I kept saying, I can't send a text message to this person because I didn't reply to their text message a month ago. I can't call this person because I haven't called them in several months. And especially for one person, you know, one of my very best friends, Hugs, I didn't call Hugs on their birthday. And that I felt was this huge thing that this huge error that I did, and I was embarrassed. And because of a mistake I made in the past, I was robbing myself of hanging out with Hugs in the present. And I mean, when I eventually did talk to Hugs, it was 1,000% fine. And we chatted on the phone for 3 hours yesterday. So, and this was the thing also was, and this is another piece of advice, is you don't have to dig yourself out with big gestures. You just have to start out with small gestures. So yes, we're saying you have to let go of the past, let go of the sunk cost. But when we say take action in the present, it doesn't have to be like this massive, you know, it's unnecessary for you to do a giant mea culpa style, I'm sorry thing. Like in my mind, I was like, I'll do this huge letter for Hugs, and I'll go out and I'll buy a present, and I even went shopping, but I couldn't find something that I thought they'd like. And then that made it worse that I was fucking up the big mea culpa thing, the huge I'm sorry. I couldn't even do the huge I'm sorry correctly, when what actually fixed the situation was Hugs just called me. And that time when the phone call came in, instead of ignoring it, I picked up the phone and I answered it and I started talking. That's all I had to do. I had to just stop not answering the phone. Totally. Or I had to pick up the phone and call somebody. That small action, I didn't have to do a huge parade. Right. I just had to pick up my phone.
Totally. And I think, I mean, to like kind of tie it into like financial actions or like quote responsible or like quote adulting actions that people feel like we're supposed to be taking but we've been avoiding, you know, it's just, there's such a parallel here, because it's like you again get yourself stuck in a like I can't do anything kind of hole of inaction, and it's fear and it's guilt and it's shame and it's I don't understand and it's something bad will happen to me if I take action and I have to do it right the first time or else I shouldn't do anything. And it's a very, very stuck place. But actually on the other side of that stuckness is like one simple step that unlocks things. And I think, you know, so I'm thinking about like a lot of people I know get very kind of like like if they're like behind on paying taxes or behind on student loans, like these things, I think feel extra, they feel extra heavy. And like, you have to do them perfectly the first time or else there's no point in doing them. And if you start getting those letters or getting those calls about the taxes or the loans, that you're like, oh my God, not only have I done it wrong, but now I'm going to go to jail, you know? And there's like a ton of like fear about what's going to happen, but that actually gets people stuck even more, as opposed to taking the actions. So here, let me tell you right now, you're not going to go to jail for your back taxes. You're not going to jail for your taxes. You're not going to jail for your student loans. If you're listening to this podcast, you do not have enough money to be going to jail for your white collar crime tax avoidance. Okay. It's just not happening. Like we're talking like hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars in taxes you actively tried to defraud the government of. Yeah, then you're looking at some white collar jail. But for most of you who just like haven't filed your taxes in too many years and the IRS is like, knock, knock, homie, I heard you made money. you just have to call them. Like you just have to open the letter. You just have to, you know, and so
It's the worst that's going to happen to you is paying interest or some fines. And it's like, I think that people are afraid to even know.
Yeah, totally.
And it's the knowing that is frightening. And, you know, realizing that it's actually about fear and not you're not like the consequences are actually not that bad.
Yeah. It's like you think that knowing is going to make it worse, but knowing actually makes it better because then you can do a thing as opposed to swirl in fear about that thing.
Exactly. And you know? This is the other thing. Being in debt is not like, I know that a lot of financial advisors are going to like trip out that I'm going to say this. It's okay to be in debt. It's okay to be in debt. Like, I think that people don't want to open that mail from the government because they're afraid that the government's going to tell them that they owe them money. And if they don't owe it.
You already owe the money. So you might as well know how much.
Exactly. Yeah,
being in debt, it's not ideal. Sure, you wish that you weren't, but it's like the tree scenario. But guess what? The only way, if what you want is to not be in debt and you currently are in debt to like taxes or your student loans, literally, if what you want is to not be, the only path, the only way there is through. And that's just, you got to open the mail. So like another piece of advice.
It's like this mind fuck where people are like, oh my God, it's more, I owe the government $3,000. I don't have $3,000. I can't pay it. And so then you just don't talk to the government. And there's something, and I mean, in Canada, if you owe the government money, you are able to, because the government's not coming to put you in jail for your $3,000. You know what I mean?
No, they're not.
If you just are like, call them, you call can them. Start yes. to be put on a payment plan, yes, something. And what I mean by it's not a bad thing to be in debt. The reason I say this is I think that sometimes people avoid getting out of debt because they don't even want to acknowledge that they're in debt because they don't want to acknowledge that feeling of being in debt. So if they don't open the letter, then they aren't in debt somewhere in their soul. You know what I mean? And I'm like,
totally
comfortable with the idea that in order to get out of debt, you have to acknowledge that you are in debt and just be comfortable with that feeling and be comfortable with the slow, because most people get out of debt slowly.
Yeah. Or even you don't have to be comfortable with the feeling, but you do have to feel it, you know? Yes. And maybe that's what it is. It's like trying to avoid the uncomfortable feeling means that you never actually get to put a plan in place to truly end the thing discomfort that's making you uncomfortable. Yeah, you know, and it's, again, it's so real. We have, I mean, at least Laura and I have both absolutely done it, you know, but it's which is why we're speaking from this place of experience, to be able to say like getting through some bullshit means looking at the bullshit, understanding where it's coming from, and then being like, well, bullshit, it's me and you, isn't it?
Yeah, let's bullshit, I made you, and now I'm going to unmake you, you know? And
the thing,
and like fines, fees, interest, I think people have a lot of shame that they're like, oh my God, I could have just paid the government, you know, $500 in the year that, you know, I made that money, but now it's X number of years later, and now it's $3,000, and you feel shame that you didn't do the optimal thing back in the day, i.e. sunk cost. Here you go.
Yep.
Honestly, those fines, fees, and interest, I'm going to say to this, those things bought you time. And you know what? Appreciate that time that you had. This happened to me where I legit recently got a call from the government, and the government was like, you owe us this amount of money, and it's from taxes that are from 8 years ago. And it was basically, I did file my taxes. They sent me a letter asking for additional backup. I never opened that letter. And then they said, oh, we're not going to let you have this deduction for a charitable donation because you never provided us the receipt that we asked for when we asked it. So then if I had paid that 8 years ago, I would have paid a lot less. And now 7 years later, the government was coming after me and there was hundreds of dollars of interest. And the funny thing was, is that I could have lost my mind about it, but I realized that 7 years ago I was a student and I didn't have that money to give them.
Right.
And the fines and the interest, I was like, you know what, government? Thanks for the cash for the last 8 years. I used it for good things and my life is better now. Here's this money that I owed you back then with interest.
Keep it moving. Toodaloo. Keep it moving. And then it's done and it's off your list and you never have to think about it again. And is it right? Who knows? Do you wish it was different? Yeah, maybe. But is it different? No, it's not. Right? You wrote the check, you put it in the mail, and now it's off your list. Yes. You know? And so, I just encounter so many people who are like, I wish it wasn't this. And I have 100% been there. It's bullshit that I'm getting this bill. Okay. It might be bullshit that you're getting this bill, but you either need to call and negotiate it down or pay it off or, do something with it. Right. And so I think this is what we're saying here. Like, when you avoid, like, I feel like a dad, but I'm like, when you avoid, the problem gets worse, but it just doesn't get solved is what it is, you know? And so here's my next piece of advice. It's like, if you're just sort of like, yeah, ladies who crunch, easy for you to say, I just literally could not bring myself to do this. So get a friend to help. Get a friend to open the mail, get a friend to open the emails, get a friend to listen to the voicemails and have them summarize the parts that matter and that need action, right? Like you can designate a person to call for your student loans for you. You can designate a person to call the IRS for you. Like if it's really coming, if you really feel that you cannot do it, like this is a great moment to like have a trusted friend sit down with you and open that shit for you. You know, like, I mean, look, I like, have like a very, very like problematic parent who would send litigious mail, like just a whole disaster. And I was finding myself unable to open the letters because they were just so emotionally upsetting for me. So I got a friend to open them. And it was just some information that whatever I was kind of useful, wasn't actually that big of a deal, but I was feeling like I just wasn't able to do it. And having a friend just literally crack the letter open was extremely helpful. Yeah. Right.
The value of having somebody even like hold your hand or help you through the worst parts of it. Like I did this for my partner who had like boxes and boxes of papers and they were like, I don't even know what's in here. I just kept putting mail in here for decades. And now I've been moving boxes of mail for 10 years.
Real.
And I sat down and put on some Netflix and I started going through the mail. And I turned like 12 boxes into 3. Shred, keep. This was hilarious, whatever. And you know what? I think that there was fear that there was going to be something bad in there. And there was nothing bad in there, you know? And even if there is something bad in there, you can deal with it. So basically, you know, stop trying to be perfect. Just stop trying to be perfect and take that action. And if that action is, I don't even know what I need to do, then go out there and reach out and find out what you need to do either by, you know, and if we're talking about finance, you know, there, you can start by just, you know, reading, listening, watching, finding out some things. And if that kind of do it yourself style is too overwhelming, remember that you can also, you know, purchase services from professionals who can do that handholding for you, right? Like if you're freaking out because you're like, I haven't filed taxes in 4 years.
Get an accountant.
You don't have to file them yourself.
Yeah.
Like just pay somebody to do it for you, a CPA or some other tax professional. Mm-hmm. You are like, I don't know what to do with my money. It's all overwhelming. I don't know what to do.
It's maybe sitting that's in my checking account. It's sitting in my savings account. There are books. There are podcasts. There are educators, myself, Laura.
There are coaches.
Many others. There are coaches, right? There are all kinds of people who can help you rip that Band-Aid or take that first step, you know? And I feel like so often it's that first step that is so hard for people to take. And like, once you get the ball rolling, often you can kind of roll it yourself, but it's, to mm-hmm. me, so much of it is like perfectionism, and it's the perfectionism that comes out of like, you know, that comes out of like white supremacist patriarchal culture, which is like, I have to be perfect. I have to do it myself. It has to be right. Like, no, this is thinking that is unhelpful and inaccurate. You don't have to somehow self-direct your own MBA in order to figure out how to follow up on some mail that you need to follow up on and like get your money doing the things you need it to do, whether it's like taking care of past, you know, situations or getting it saved and invested for the future, right? It just, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's just time for action number one. And I think that's, you know, and kind of to bring it back to what Laura, you were talking about, it didn't have to be perfect when you answered the phone when your friend called. You just had to answer the phone, right?
And it's I answered the phone, and now my life is better.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Even, you know what? Even if what you're afraid of, you're like, you know, if I go out there and take action, what if I fail? If I answer the phone and it is a friend of mine who's like, you know what? You messed up real bad and now I don't want to be your friend. In a way, that lets you move on.
Yeah.
And in the financial sense, I think it's like, what is the worst, you know, like what's the worst that could happen with all of your debt that you're ignoring? The worst that could happen probably is bankruptcy. And even then, bankruptcy isn't death and it can be a positive thing.
It's
literally a mechanism where you get to etch a sketch and have a fresh start. And I've known several people who have filed for bankruptcy, and in looking back, they have often said that they wish they had done it sooner because it allowed them to start over and start building towards a positive outcome in their life.
Totally.
Instead of refusing to admit that, you know, instead of refusing to acknowledge the bad things, refusing to be imperfect, they just drag that imperfection further into, you know what I mean? They just drag that error further into their life instead of just being like, yo, I fucked up. It was some bullshit, but it's not over for me.
That's right.
Coming back from some bullshit.
I'm
coming back from some bullshit. So that's what we did right now in this very episode. We just came back from some bullshit. We were quiet for 5 months. And so we decided how
the grand scheme of time is just nothing.
It's just nothing. Really, what I think that it's more that we just, because I was the queen of ghosting for like a little while, we just didn't communicate. So that's why we're releasing this kind of like unedited raw episode to say we're still alive. We're still doing this project. We love everybody. And I know that you guys have been listening, and actually we've been gaining more listeners over the last 5 months. And so we're taking our own advice right now, and we are starting small, and
we're here taking action.
Doable action.
That's right. And so we're starting to work on season 3 right now. We're getting our concepting together. Obviously, we're getting this video/podcast out to y'all. So we'll update on Instagram and
when we have a better sense of when we'll start releasing season 3.
And the other thing on season 3, again, thank you so much to our Patreon listeners, is that we are going to be looking for a sound editor to pay to edit the podcast for us. So if that's you or somebody that you want to recommend to us, we would 100% please take those recommendations.
Yes, because we've already recorded. We recorded the listener mail episode, but one of the big blocks has been, to be honest, has been the editing is the hardest part for us. So, you know, we have a little bit of a nest egg from our patrons. Thank you so, so much.
Thank y'all. Seriously.
Now, universe, help us find a sound editor who wants to help us out.
All right.
Well, that's Laura, it.
I love you so much. Listeners, thank you for listening through. This was an episode on how to come back from some bullshit, which is a normal course of life. We will be back at you in the next couple months with our next podcast. Otherwise, you could listen back to season 1 or season 2. You could subscribe as a patron on Patreon. We've got $2, $4, and $5 levels because we're keeping it real over here.
You can talk to us on Instagram, talk to us through email. Let us know. We love to hear from you. Yes, share it indeed with your friends. And you know what? We love you all so much.
And what is our Instagram handle?
Tell the people. It's Bottom Lines Top Dollars. Bottom Lines Top Dollars.
Bottom Lines Top Dollars. We're also Bottom Lines Top Dollars at gmail.com. If you have a little idea of things you want us to talk about, we do read those and we do take them into account. So thank you all so much. Laura, heart you. I'll see you soon. Bye, everyone.
This has been another episode of Bottom Lines Top Dollars, a podcast made by queer punks and anti-capitalist finance professionals who, like you, don't trust money.
And are therefore obsessed with understanding it.
Your hosts are the ladies who crunch. That's me, Laura Boo.
And me, Hadassah Damian from Ride Free Fearless Money. Folks, if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and review us on whatever podcast app you use. And speaking of money, if you are able, throw us a few bucks at patreon.com/bottomlinestopdollars.
Funds from our Patreon will pay for the costs of making and distributing this podcast. And if we grow this project big enough, for the cost of getting help to make this.
Oh, I love help and I love getting to pay for it. But other free things you can do is support us by following us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search for Bottom Lines Top Dollars or Ladies Who Crunch.
We also have a website where we publish show notes on our blog at ladieswhocrunch.club.
Finally, if you have questions to submit for our end of season listener mail episode or feedback for us, or if you just have your own punk money stories to share, you can email us at bottomlinestopdollars@gmail.com or just find us on one of the social media platforms and message us there.
We'd like to thank our listeners and friends who have contributed to the show, and especially to our researchers and idea sounding boards, Ariel Federo and Handy Levine.
And remember, friends, punk's not dead, but capitalism still sucks. And if what you heard in this podcast sounded familiar, you're not alone. Thanks for listening.